episode 590 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and apparently I might need to find a new partner in my quest for New Hannibal.
This is Gary from Jacksonville. Please don't kill me. Anyway, I do have to say, this feels like the beginning of a new season for us. We have so many new shows and even, you know, just second episode shows coming up this show. I'm really excited. It almost feels like the fall season's upon us.
Yes, the summer season is a very real thing these days. And it's telling that we have so many shows that are just at the beginning of their seasons, and we still haven't gone through the full list of new shows. There are still some debuts that will come after this. Quite a few, actually. So the summer season is well underway as we say goodbye to some late spring favorites and just get things kicked off for some shows that some of which are just debuting now. This is literally the beginning of their journey. But let's see, we have about 12 episodes on our list this time, covering 11 shows. Yes, once again, we have shows that start off with a double episode. I hate it when they do that. But anyway, before we go into any of that, as usual, we are going to be covering these episode by episode. We're going to go through our bottom three for the week, and then roughly our top three, and then the rest that falls in the middle. Our ratings, our scores, shall we say, typically fall in a pattern where 7 is your, you know, typical average run-of-the-mill episode, 8 is more above average, 9 is your really exceptional stuff, and then as you get closer to 10, it's almost always because of a very subjective personal reason that anyone will be happy to get into if they are available to do so. But yes, anything below 7 is typically got some structural or ill-advised plot elements. I can happily say that this is yet another week where we do not have any episodes that came in below 7. It's been a pretty good run for about a month now where we haven't had anything that's been that low on our scale. And in fact, we have a show that really could have been a perfect 10, but it wound up being just a bit below. So we have a really good run of episodes here, and that's something that we're happy to say when we are, once again, as Gary pointed out, talking about a lot of shows that are in the early part of their summer seasons here. But before we go into any more detail, Edmund, you usually give a disclaimer right about now.
Certainly. If, as you may have guessed already, when we discuss these shows, we like to discuss just about anything and everything that happened in them. So that means you will be spoiled. But we certainly hope you've had a chance to catch up, since, as always, we've tried to give you, 7 to 10 days or so to do that.
Yes, indeed. And we are going to start, as I said, with every week we have, you know, a bottom two or three that aren't necessarily, quote unquote, the worst. They just may wind up having the lowest score, but that doesn't mean they're bad. And in this case, they're more just kind of average episodes of TV, which, you know, is unfortunately the bottom for us this time around. But I would say that each one of these had something that kind of kept it from being above average or being higher up the list, and we can get into those. The first one here is Sense8 Season 1, Episode 3, Smart Money's on the Skinny Bitch. Sun's underground secret life is revealed, and Kephas benefits from her skills. And I have no idea if I said that last that other name right. Sorry about that. But this one came in at an average of 7.5. In fact, everybody who gave it a score gave it a 7.5. Which is notable because it's a bit of a drop from the first two episodes. And I'm curious as to seeing why you guys felt this way. Gary, how about you?
Well, you know, I have to say, I just binge-watched episodes 2 and 3 because after I watched episode 1, I really didn't want to watch this. I had such a hard time with the episode that I really didn't want to subject myself to it over again. But I persevered, and I have to say that I felt like there's actually a glimmer of hope now that I'm at episode 3. I feel that most of the world building's done, and we're starting to see some of the storyline actually progress. And I'm happy for that because I was bored out of my mind so far. So I think it's up for me. But I just like that they're finally moving with the story. I didn't feel it was really going anywhere before this.
How about you, Edmund? I do believe this is a bit of a drop for you.
Yeah, for me, it was a bit of a drop because it felt like more of a transitional episode where it was more just sort of continuing to establish the connections between some of the characters and layering in a little bit more information, certainly in terms of the whole transferring fighting skills and that was going on. But in terms of some of the more interesting things were being set up. I felt like, you know, particularly in Nomi's situation, they weren't pushing through on those yet. So it was it felt like a little bit of a lull compared to all of the stuff that was being set up in the first two.
Yeah, I would say that for me, what made this drop a bit is that the episode was leading up to this whole idea of the transfer of Sun's fighting skills to Caphus. I believe it is Caphus, right? Am I saying it correctly? Caphus? Anyway. Van Damme. Okay.
Yes.
But the problem that I had with it is the way that it was done visually made the concept of the transfer of the abilities a lot more vague and unfulfilling than I think was originally intended. Because the way it was being done visually almost made it seem like Sun would make a certain move, Caphus would do the exact same move, and it would help him fight his, you know, gangster enemies. The problem is that just from it looks great when you watch it, and then as soon as you start thinking about how that would work, it doesn't hold up at all. Because hand-to-hand combat isn't that clear cut. There'd be no way that Sun's opponent and Caphus' opponent would act and react the same way for the same moves. It doesn't work mechanically. The physics don't add up. And unfortunately, it kind of left me watching the episode with that feeling of, wow, that was a swing and a miss. Not only that, but because Sun as a character is much more withdrawn and, Caphus and his issues are what they are. These were not the most interesting characters out of the bunch yet. And I would say compare that to Nomi and her travails in the previous episode. It was definitely not on the same level as that, kind of what you were getting into, Edmund. Mm-hmm. So for me, it just felt like this was just the pieces were there, but they weren't gelling nearly as well for me as they did in the first and second episodes. And suddenly it made a lot more sense why the critics out there who were kind of lukewarm on the series, I felt like I understood them finally, because I could see them kind of waiting to see, like, oh, they're giving me three episodes. So clearly they think by the end of the third episode, it's all going to click. And then if any of them felt like I did at the end of the third episode, where it was like, that really didn't come together the way they intended, it would leave you with this bad taste in your mouth. Like the whole thing wasn't coming together because the third episode just wasn't as sharp. And I feel like also there's a certain storytelling structure that I think maybe the fourth episode is maybe culminating a few things, because there's 12 episodes. So, you know, you figure your three acts, your fourth episode is where your first act actually is more likely to end. So I feel like this was leading into more information about the transfer of abilities and skills and so forth, but it didn't go the full distance and therefore it felt very incomplete. Does that make sense? Because again, if you're not kind of watching the show and looking at the details, it may be hard to see where I'm talking about, because it literally I could like pull up the scene and point to exactly what I'm talking about. But really, it just felt like they went for the visuals instead of the mechanics of it, and it didn't quite work.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, it was the whole thing of the way they were flashing back and forth with the actors in the different situations where it. And it was particularly that point when what was going on in the boxing ring seemed to be mirroring what was going on the African street, and it was just like, no, that doesn't quite make sense.
Hmm. Yeah. And if it had been done in such a way that it was clear that it was the general abilities that were transferring versus specific physical moves, I think it would have worked better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But one thing I will say is the whole Mexican telenovela arc, which I know when it was first introduced, I was kind of thinking like, well, this is just in here for the for more sort of slightly more comic relief. Even though I still think it is that is part of it, but it's also that whole section of the series seems to me like, you know, yes, if Pedro Almodovar was given a TV series, this is what he would come up with. So I'm having a lot of fun with that part of it.
Fair enough. I still feel like even that was stronger the previous episode. This felt like it kind of went a little sideways, but there we are. Coming in, also in our bottom three, is, come on, interwebs. It's a series premiere, but I have to say, it's not surprising for a series premiere to be in our bottom three. It is surprising for it to be above average. Yes. In this case, it is Killjoys, Season 1, Episode 1, Bangarang. Warrants are served by a fun-loving, hard-living trio of interplanetary bounty hunters in this series, which begins with Dutch and John in a race against time and a competing Killjoy to save Davin's life and clear their names. And this came in at an average of 7.5. And Gary, you gave this its highest score at an 8, so it seems like you liked this premiere quite a bit.
Oh, I did. It was a lot of fun. You know, a lot of people point out the similarities to Firefly for it, and I'm not saying they're not there, but at the same time, it's the best of it. You know, it's some of the wittiness there, and a lot of the action, and you know, it's sort of an unclean future. It's not quite unclean to Blade Runner levels, but it, you know, it's still not your pristine Star Trek future either. And you know, I like that. It shows, you know, corporations are sort of in control, but and these are people that are making their living sort of on the edge of that. And I thought the pace was good. The characters I'm really starting to like, and I think it's got nothing but upward potential. But you know, when I'm done watching a show, did I like it? Yes. Did I enjoy it? Heck yes. So, you know, that's why I rated it. I think you said I was the highest with an 8, and I couldn't go any higher because I think there is a lot of room for growth, but heck, I had a great time watching this episode. I really enjoyed it.
Edmund, what would you add to that?
I thought it was a good solid debut. Of course, interestingly, in terms of the behind the scenes stuff, this was created by Michelle Lafretta, who also created Lost Girl, and then of course did part ways with the show under if I remember right, creative differences. And so certainly, you know, if you think of that first season of Lost Girl, and I can see sort of in the bones of this show some of that similar sort of irreverence and relationships that might go in slightly different and less stereotypical ways. And certainly, again, you do have at the moment that is, you know, it is the female bounty hunter who's basically the boss and the head of the company. So certain similarities to Bo there. I'm intrigued to see what they come up with, and I think it is a nice return to sci-fi Friday for sci-fi.
Yes, and I will have to agree wholeheartedly that the character mix helps tremendously for this show because, they seem to be having a lot of fun. Let's put it that way. And I kind of liked all the characters. Certainly, they found a good actress for Dutch. I mean, that was going to have to be a good casting, and it was. She's freaking gorgeous. So what I like about that, though, is that it doesn't define her character. It's just part of the equation. And I would say that they gave her a good enough background that it is almost incidental, or at least it is kind of part and parcel of the background that they gave her. Which, again, I'm being a little bit vague because so was the premiere, but in a good way. I promise, it's in a good way. And of course, having one of the Ashmore brothers brings a little bit of that genre gravitas to it, where it's a familiar face, if nothing else. I don't recognize the other two on the cast nearly as well. I'm not missing something, I hope, but there we are. But a good premiere, I really hope that it at least matches this, if not improves upon it, because it was a really good start. And I definitely see the similarities to shows like to Firefly and so on, not necessarily in the context of what's going on, but the visual style. you've got a little bit of that whole Alliance Corps versus, you know, ragtag frontier going on, and the whole idea of kind of, you know, bounty hunters is would fit very easily in the Firefly universe. You could almost imagine that somebody thought, like, hey, what if we could tell stories in the Firefly universe, and we made our characters bounty hunters? And that's where they started, and then said, okay, now we got to figure out how to do it without being in Firefly. But anyway, moving on then to our next show, the other show that came in our bottom three, and that is Dark Matter, Season 1, Episode 2, Episode 2.
Anyway. They are just so original with names. I got to give them credit.
Absolutely. The crew come to terms with revelations about their respective pasts. At the same time, they face the dilemma of helping the miners against the insurmountable odds of or abandoning them to certain death. And this one came in at an average of 7.13. And I guess I was the most favorable, but only by a little bit. Gary, what were your thoughts on this one?
I like the premise. I like the storyline. The visuals are great. The acting is horrendous. I cannot suspend my disbelief that to feel that they're reading teleprompters actually on the set. It's that sort of painfully obvious about what they are doing. And it just keeps taking me out of the moment for it. You know, I've read the source material. And while this whole plot line is a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? Stereotypical or, you know, commonplace, this, you know, bad guys turn good or, you know, something along those lines, or redemption. I don't even mind I don't want to sound too mean, but to say, you know, the lack of vision for the show. I think you could traipse this basic storyline out and run with it and do well. But the actors, there's just, I don't feel any chemistry. I feel like they're, you're just reading their lines off. And maybe season two is a little bit early to expect a lot, but you know, other shows can do it, and this one is not doing it. And I hope they snap out of it quick or sort of get into their groove, maybe.
Edmund, how about you?
I would agree with most of that, and it also kind of surprised me in terms of since I had read that little four issue miniseries, basically, of the comics, at sort of how much of the story they've already burned through. So, you know, we're not quite in Game of Thrones season 5 situation, but it's I was expecting it to take at least, you know, or, you know, perhaps more along the lines of four episodes to cover four issues. But especially since I now really have no idea where they're going, that's really going to be the interesting question. Is, you know, okay, so you have this initial incident, and then how are you going to build out the universe beyond that? Because compared to what they were doing on Killjoys with getting that impression of similar setups to Firefly, you know, yeah, I get the sense here that yes, they were there is this wider universe out there, but if it's just sort of corporations getting the better of each other, I don't know how interesting it's going to be.
What I think was the killer here for me, which it kind of took a little bit of the shine off of this particular series, was that maybe this is the effect you were talking about, Gary, with the acting, but this episode's plot felt so cookie cutter. It was so generic to the point that I almost didn't need to watch the episode to know what was going to happen. It was in generic, industrial-esque, you know.
Oh yeah, no, I
locations. I the combat was just kind of there. It was, yeah. I just felt like.
But you know, if there at least been, you know, the good acting there, that would have pulled it through. And while it's mainly cookie cutter, you know, the overall sort of storyline is maybe not unique, but you know, I don't mind watching it, but it just didn't come through.
Yeah, it took all the intrigue of the first episode, and it kind of did nothing with it. Mm-hmm. And so now what it felt like was that it should have been a 2-hour premiere. This should have been a 2-hour premiere to pay off just the scenario that was introduced in the first episode, and then have enough nuggets coming out of the big combat to bring you back for the next episode. But by parsing it out this way, they kind of had like the second half of the second act and the third act in this episode, and it just was there. They just didn't have the budget to do anything better with it. But anyway, we'll see where it goes from here. I mean, it's very possible that this is simply just pacing, early season pacing. Let's talk about some shows that did better, though. And that would be our top three. And our top three is all obviously above an eight, but kind of varies wildly in just those top three. It spans a point and a half difference. Let's start with, and we'll just go ahead and talk about both episodes because they're literally one right after the other in the order here. The Last Ship, Season 2, Episode 1, Unreal City. Season 2 opens with the fractured team joining together with an underground resistance. Meanwhile, an imprisoned Rachel tries to help the sick as doses of the cure run low. And this came in at an average of 8.25. Not quite hitting the top three, but literally number four on the list this week. Last Ship, Season 2, Episode 2, Fight the Ship. As Chandler and Thornwald raid Granderson's headquarters, the crew of the Nathan James fights to reclaim control of their ship. Really, I understand why these two episodes were put one right after the other, because it was basically a two-part premiere. Oddly enough, they didn't try and stitch the two episodes together. They were just two episodes run one right after the other. But it basically was an 8.25 and then an 8.13, so pretty close in terms of maintaining the quality between the two episodes. Gary, once again, you came in with, other than Nadim, who gave it nines for both, you gave it the next highest scores at an 8.5 and 8, respectively.
Yeah, I thought they came back strong this season. You know, they left us on this whole cliffhanger, and I thought they resolved it well. And you know, in the end, they defeated the bad guy. I forget her name, but the mayor, president, or whatever title she was holding of Olympia, you know, ended up taking her life, and she made a small plea for justifying some of what she did. And while you know, it's convenient for us to look at it from the point of now that the Nathan James is back and they have the cure, the first month or two, I'm not saying I agree with, but I can understand why she early on made some of the decisions she made. Although when struck in the face with the cure and the other information, her reasons start to go by the wayside for why she's continuing to do what she was doing. And so it painted her as a sympathetic villain, and I was okay with that. The Nathan James assault teams are uncannily accurate, and I guess that's a bit of plot, but at the same time, they almost seem to things seem to go almost too easy for them all the time. So I wish they'd make it a little, maybe some of the rescues a little tighter, or the resolutions a little less sloppy. I mean a little less neat. I realize that they do have people dying, but at the same time, it still feels a little too easy.
Maybe a little bit, but that of course plays into kind of the type of show that it is. You almost feel like they had it a little easy in the first season too, although as the season marched on, they did have a lot of complications. So maybe they're starting off here because it is the way that fans tend to get. Edmund, how about you? Your thoughts on this premiere?
Yeah, I guess for me, I mean, where I scored the second one, also like Gary, a little bit lower, but I think part of it was that sense of the actual taking back of the ship feeling a little generic, and I actually realized as Gary was talking about the ways in which some of their assaults and can be a little too easy. It's I'm realizing it's what I now think of as the strike back effect, because. Certainly, Stone and Stockbridge, are the absolute super soldiers, where they can go in, you know, just the two of them, and take out just about anything that's thrown at them. There's a little bit of that going on in the Last Ship as well. But still, I did like the way they laid out Malfrey Woodard's character, and certainly that whole sense of the best of intentions, but just making unfortunate decisions, but I like the way that there is the ongoing plot with the plague and the cure, of course, but the actual individual arcs do tend to lay themselves out over just a couple of episodes, and then they get on to the next. So it's that's actually similar to Strike Back as well. So that a bit of that mix of slightly serialized, but still keeping it episodic for the that summer viewing audience, which may not feel like it needs to be stretched quite as much as other times of the year.
Mm-hmm. Coming in at our number two slot is Daredevil, Season 1, Episode 12, The Ones We Leave Behind. Fisk seeks revenge. Meanwhile, recent events haunt Karen, and shocking information about Fisk's financing emerges. Okay, so, other than me completely blowing the end of that, Daredevil did not blow it. It came in at an average of 8.67, which some weeks would be our number one episode for the week, but not this time. It came in number two. Penultimate episode for the season, and Gary, once again, coming in a little bit lower than everyone else, but not by much of a margin at all. What was it? What were your thoughts on this in terms of highlights, lowlights?
I didn't like Ben getting killed. Was probably my was probably what brought it down the most for me. I enjoyed that character, and I was hoping to see him throughout the second season that I hope will be present at some point. So I didn't like that. I didn't feel his death was necessary. I still find it hard to believe that Fisk is dirtying his hands so directly in this case, where he wouldn't just have him dealt with. I realize he doesn't have Wesley around anymore, but at the same time, I still don't believe that he would risk his reputation or put himself in any sort of chance of being found out. So so that both those things sort of dropped it down just a little bit for me.
Evan, what were your impressions of this one?
Yeah, certainly I didn't like seeing Ben go, although I didn't necessarily see it as a criticism. I mean, I can see the point of why would Fisk get his hands dirty, but I also have taken much of the season to be as much origin stories for, you know, or not necessarily completely origin, but the early days and development of both Fisk and Matt, with this being the penultimate episode, I mean there was that sense of getting things set up for the big finale. I mean, we've had both of them distracted by their injuries and obviously by the attack on Vanessa, and certainly with Fisk taking things into his own hands. We're seeing things being set up for that clash that we know has to come eventually.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much of Fisk kind of losing it and being willing to dirty his hands at this particular stage of the game is just how much he's thrown off by Vanessa's near death and by his mother getting pulled into the dirty side of his life, so to speak. But at the same time, I think that that's probably the one thing that I would say kept this at least a half point for me, is that no matter how distracted he is, how he is missing the likelihood that Leland is involved in this stuff with Vanessa. Mm-hmm. I don't know, because Leland looks guilty every single time that the topic comes up. He just starts to stammer and look away, and it's like, really? You had something to do with it. I mean, come on. Somehow you had something to do with it, because you look guilty, man. Never mind the fact that, you know, he is, in at least from the comic perspective, Owsley is a rival of Fisk. I know that it can't possibly really fall out that way in this particular version of it, but it's just like, okay, there is at least a kind of thematic history there of, you know, self-interest involved. And like I said, he's been kind of telegraphing that the whole way. So Wilson is definitely off of his game if he's not picking up on this. Really. Anyway, still came in at an 8.67, so very impressive. Our number one show for the week, however, is probably no surprise after all of the telegraphing that we've done all week for ourselves, and that is Hannibal Season 1, Episode 3, Secundo.
Yes.
Will...
And of course, that is actually Season 3, Episode 3, but...
Yeah, why did I do that? That's weird. We want it to be the first season again.
Yes. We're trying to go back to the beginning, and yes.
Season 3, Episode 3, Secundo. Will gains a potential ally in his continuing hunt for Hannibal when he makes his way to Hannibal's childhood home in Lithuania. Elsewhere, Jack arrives in Italy and hopes to avert tragedy by finding Will, and Bedelia gives Hannibal a warning. This one came in at an average of 9.75.
Yes, because bronze...
Guys, you're stacking the deck now. Come on.
Yes, well, Only Bronze Thumb gave it a 10. I just gave it a 9.5. but yeah, this was quite an episode as Will makes his way to the Lecter ancestral home and makes them intriguing discoveries and as they say, yeah, picks up at an ally against Hannibal, and in so doing, also continues to demonstrate that he's getting just as good at Hannibal at recruiting people through strangely manipulative psychological means.
Hmm. Interesting. Interesting. I'm sure that Bronze Thumb could go on for like, you know, ages with this.
Yes.
However, I think it's just suffices to say that if it is that high up on the score, yeah. It's got to be, like I said, almost personally perfect, which obviously Bronze Thumb thought it was because he gave it a 10. He didn't think of any other way it could have been better than what he saw on the screen. But that's our top show for the week. No surprise there. So we still have a few other shows that were on the list that kind of fell in between. In this case, it was anywhere from a 7.67 up to an 8. So definitely middle of the road, but right at that above average category. And we're going to start off with the second episode of the miniseries, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, Season 1, Episode 2, How is Lady Pole? Jonathan Strange goes to London after his magical ability grows to take an apprenticeship with Mr. Norrell. Like I said, this one came in at an 8. And Edmund, what would you say about this one in particular? Did you get this far in your reading of the source material?
Actually, no, well, I hadn't actually gotten that far in the source material in the original book, and I've actually for now decided to just follow along with the TV series and then read. This is one case where I've already gotten the sense that I don't necessarily mind if I'm kind of spoiled to some of the book contents, because the book certainly with its size and footnotes, etc., is quite a different experience. So I'm perfectly happy to have to not be spoiled on the TV show, get to know some of the major elements, and then get to go back and read them and really go in depth. But certainly with what was being laid out here, we are certainly getting the sense of as is often the case with magic, that yes, once you start trying to be practical about it and bring in strange silver-haired villains played by Mark Warren, fresh off his Musketeers stint, there are going to be unintended consequences that might be a little tricky to deal with. And also between Strange and Norrell, I'm getting a sort of Mozart versus Salieri vibe, with Strange being the natural savant, Norrell being the more analytical and plotting behind him.
Hmm. Yeah, they definitely they're doing a nice job of setting up the rivalry side of this, even though only one side is really even mildly seeing it that way right now. You know, Strange is kind of taking this very much as it comes, and almost in such a cavalier fashion that it's reckless. And you can kind of see Norrell's point, but at the same time, Norrell is so introverted and stuffy about the whole thing and really feels this need to control it so much, for personal reasons, if not because of whatever vision he has about the way that it should be, so to speak. It's not yet an active rivalry, but it definitely, you see the seeds of it already planted.
Yeah.
So a nice introductory part of the story, but it doesn't lose any momentum from the previous episode. And since this is a mini series, I mean, it's obviously being paced out pretty well in terms of just keeping the plot moving, but also the character beats moving. So a good, strong second episode for that. We also had this week the season finale of Orphan Black, Season 3, Episode 10, History Yet to Be Written. In the Season 3 finale, Kester and Topside force Sarah to make uneasy alliances while Clone Club races toward the truth. Elsewhere, Donnie presents Helena with an unexpected gift, and Allison hears the results of her candidacy. And this came in at an average of 8. I was a little surprised that at the end of the day, when I kind of thought back on it, I thought, yeah, you know what, that's an 8, because while I was watching it, I really wasn't sure where I was going to land.
Yes.
It was kind of all over the map.
Yeah, although after all of my criticism of them for the all of their various different plots and counter-organizations and things, I was actually pleasantly surprised at how they did kind of manage to just bring all of the different conspiracies together in the end by bringing back the Neolutionists, which I barely remembered from season one. So thank you for the previously on. So, but yeah, it actually did kind of work out. And of course, you know, as we've mentioned James Frayne earlier in the week. Of course, you know, he was back as Ferdinand and having Ferdinand. Turn tail and switch sides really you know kind of made sense and certainly I thought helped bring things to a head quite nicely. Sorry, couldn't resist.
it's right there anyway. So a nice ending to the season, and it brought the season to a close in pretty good terms. I would say that they. Again, it might have even been better if, while it's nice that they showed it on the previously on, a little more exposition, guys,
yes,
would go a long way. Anyway, Salem Season 2, Episode 12, Midnight Never Come, the final countdown to the consecration begins. Wow, did the AMC? Anyway, they must have had time to farm out to...
Yes, now that Mad Men's ended, yes, they have to take their talents elsewhere.
They must. This one came in at an 8 as penultimate episodes for the season go. This one was pretty nice. The only thing that I kind of found weird, and the way I put it in the note here probably sounded very different than what I had in mind. The character of Sebastian at one point, Mercy, who is certainly doing her best to look much more mature than perhaps her character is mentally,
yes.
Makes a seduction play against Sebastian. What I'm kind of curious about is that I really felt like Sebastian, as a character, might have let her go ahead and do whatever she wanted before kicking her out and throwing her on her ear.
Yes.
Only because seeing her as completely worthless, I could almost see him play and toy with her emotions that way, because he's kind of toyed with people's emotions regarding their sense of importance all season long. So it just felt like odd that he wouldn't even just use and dispose of her along the way. But I guess there's only so much you can do with the standards that even WGN is pushing.
Right. But, yeah. I suppose it was meant to highlight, you know, just how devoted he now is towards Mary. But yeah, it did seem a not completely in keeping with the way that, you know, this manipulative, you know, mother and son duo that we've come to expect.
Yeah, and I understand it is following up on the stuff with Mary, but even there, the stuff with Mary has always felt like it is over. It's a show don't tell or a tell don't show,
yes,
problem.
Yeah,
we're told constantly how much he is intrigued by Mary, but we've barely seen them on screen together.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a little bit odd there. We also had Defiance, Season 3, Episode 3, The Broken Bow. Amanda negotiates with the Omek, a new alien race for the future of Defiance, and the Tars return to find much changed and their loyalty tested between the humans. Okay. The Omek and the Votanis Collective. Meanwhile, Nolan and Ariza encounter a survivor of Votanis Collective atrocities that can aid their first strike against General Ram Tak's oncoming army. Wow, that was not at all a tortured recap, was it?
Well, you wanted a longer one, they gave it to you.
Yeah, they did. Wow, okay. This one came in at an average of 7.83. Gary, you actually managed to catch this one.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I'm caught up with the series at this point for this season. I dropped it down a little bit. It probably would have been higher. I don't like the way the Tars are being portrayed. They always seem so much more manipulative that to have them sort of be lackeys doesn't seem in keeping, or at least that they're not trying to rail a little bit more against Tak's manipulation seems a little odd to me. So that I didn't care for that much. As far as the Omek go, I don't mind them introducing them. Obviously they're showing, you know, they show their spaceship up in orbit with hundreds upon hundreds of other Omeks, even though mm-hmm. they claim to be the last ones.
Yes.
So that's a sort of nice ominous, waiting for the other foot to drop kind of thing, which I like because it gives them more power and, I guess, you know, it instills more fear for us than the actual people that they're dealing with. So not that they're liked well to begin with, but it's sort of nice to for us as the viewer to realize that they have much more going on than the people around them realize. So I enjoyed that little twist in the story. And so I thought it got off to a good start. Just the TARS characterization seems thin.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. How about you, Edmund?
I certainly agree with they have shifted the TARS, but I'm still not convinced that especially Stama isn't going to certainly to take advantage of the situation in ways perhaps currently unforeseen. I thought primarily continuing on the stuff that I like from the opening episodes, and particularly this, the ominous nature of the Omek, and having a wild card element that really does feel ominous. I just think is really well done. And again, I mean, we'll Falling Skies is coming back for that final season, so we will see if they've perhaps learned anything about how to give us more alien races that might be a little scarier.
Maybe a little too late, but we'll see. I like this perfectly fine. It was a nice way to follow up on the first two episodes of the season, but definitely it's still strong, but I feel like they're still trying to pan out exactly what it is that the consequences of this whole family dynamic falling apart actually mean, this whole thing with Ramtak, mm-hmm. and all of that, what exactly that means as well as the Omek. I mean, they've kind of got these two new antagonists on different fronts, and I'm still not clear exactly where it's going. So they're definitely early on, they've got the benefit of doubt with me, but we'll see how long it takes for them to really get this straightened out, or if they start to slip a bit. Finally, we have the season premiere of True Detective, Season 2, Episode 1, The Western Book of the Dead. Sounds like light reading. Season 2 begins with the murder of a corrupt California politician with possible ties to a career criminal, and the ensuing investigation that brings together three law enforcement officers from different jurisdictions. Yes, and this one came in at an average of 7.67. And while we didn't really give too much attention at all to True Detective Season 1, this does feel like a bit of a drop. Edmund, you are the sole person who contributed to the score that is here with us tonight. So what say you?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, compared to that, the Season 1 reception with Woody Harrelson and of course, especially Matthew McConaughey, it's just sort of coming out of the gate with these two amazing characters. This second season, they've recast. It's they're now in Los Angeles. It's a completely different story, and this one was much more unfocused. And other people think so too. The story itself, it was a case of where you're following these people, you really have no idea what the connection is until the very end of the episode. It felt like there's very much a conscious effort to sort of evoke some of Robert Altman's films, and especially Shortcuts. For me, I think perhaps where me and Nadim gave it an 8 and Bronze Thumb gave it a 7, a lot of that hinges on how well you react to that final moment when as they mentioned in the recap, literally all three of the stories converge, and these three cops from different jurisdictions are all standing over this one body, it worked for me and got me intrigued on now hopefully finding some of those connections rather than just feeling a little lost and thinking, well, yeah, these are somewhat seedy and broken characters again, just like last time. And, now let's find out what's actually going on here.
We shall definitely see how this progresses going forward. I wonder if this is just a weak premiere.
Possibly.
I mean, sophomore slumps aside as far as people and their concerns about it, it can be difficult to come back from a critically and audience acclaimed first season and try and follow it up. We've seen other shows that have started their second seasons off a little bit weak and then managed to bounce right back.
Yes, exactly. So.
Yes, so that's it for this week. Guys, anything that isn't on the list? Any movies or anything else that are worthy of note? Gary?
No, Star Wars Rebels starts back next week as we're recording, so I'm looking forward to that.
You do know it's only the premiere episode, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so we'll be deferring that at least until the actual season starts, because why get all worked up when we can't follow up on anyway? But I will say, already saw it, and pretty good start to the second season. I can definitely see the darker undertones playing through, and it's a much more robust storytelling that we're seeing here. Edmund, how about you? Anything new on your front?
Well, the reason why I was able to compare The Last Ship to Strike Back is that Strike Back is, in fact, coming back to Cinemax. So, it is what has already been announced long before Sullivan Stapleton decided to fall off jet skis and injure himself, that this will be the final outing. We get I believe it is 8 episodes of special forces tooling around Thailand and Asia, and of course doing nasty things to bad guys.
Hmm. Well, there you go. Speaking of doing nasty things to bad guys, I mentioned it before, but I finally got my chance to start with the first, I would say, roughly 2 or 3 hours of Batman Arkham Knight, the final game in the Arkham trilogy, and. While it's great to be able to just unleash upon thugs in Gotham City time and time again with very little pity, this game kind of threw me off a little bit by introducing the Batmobile, which would be fine if it was just a way to get around the absolutely massive map of Gotham a little bit faster. But at least at the beginning of the game, they are kind of forcing you to use it all the time. And some of it is for, like, Riddler-based challenges where he's forcing Batman to go through, like, a racing trial or something like that. It feels so forced. The fact that they're like, you wanted the Batmobile? Well, fine, we're going to give you it, and we're going to make you use it all the time. And it's kind of like, if I wanted a Batman racing game, I would have asked for it, really. And it's very hard for me to get used to having to play with car mechanics in a Batman game. And I'm terrible at it, which is why I'm kind of ranting slightly. I'm hoping that I get used to it quickly, or it's going to become the thing that almost kills my enjoyment of a game I've been anticipating. So, yeah. And a little bit disappointed in that, but at the same time, it's going to be a good summer for justice. yes, and other than that, I am looking forward in the coming weeks to the premiere of Ant-Man. It's the excitement in our household is growing quickly. That said, it may be very close to the premiere by the time that we are back on the air, because we are going to be taking next weekend off as far as recording goes. We will, of course, have next week some repeats and encores. We are going to take off the July 4th weekend here because basically July 4th is the night that we typically would record. And, well... yeah. As exciting as it might be to have random explosions in the background.
Because we care about your audio quality so much that we are going to.
Yes, that's right.
That. Yes, we prefer to just have them happen in the shows we watch, not the shows we record. So.
That's right. So we're going to give everybody a little bit of a break from having to contend with that. Just go ahead and celebrate America's birthday without recording on that weekend. So we will be back with some fresh material. So next time that we record, it'll be 2 weeks worth of episodes, but we are going to split it, basically 1 week and then the other week. And we'll have 2 weeks worth of news to kind of parse through. So we'll be back in July in a couple weeks. But until then, thank you for listening.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, But there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.